we got sharks, we got the KKK, and we got dogs. Cute little dogs. See which one's going to be the movie pick of the week next.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies.
Come on, Lauren. Come on. Welcome, everyone, to episode 2 of LAOFCS Weekly. Woo, try to say that fast. Not going to happen. I am here. I am the host, Scott Menzel, and joining me today are three panelists today, three wonderful members of the LA Online Film Critics Society. And we will start off with my wonderful host with the most, Carla Renata. Introduce yourself.
Well, I'm Carla Renata, the Kirby Film Critic. And like Scott said, we host a show together on Black Hollywood Live called Black Tomatoes. Hey, good morning. Or afternoon or evening, whatever time it is you watch it.
I'm Jimmy O from JoeBlow.com and Arrow in the Head, and I do a whole bunch of other stuff, so there you go.
And I'm Lauren Huff, and I work at The Hollywood Reporter.
Look at that fancy one at the end. She's just like, and I work at The Hollywood Reporter.
I know.
And I'm done.
Boom.
I'm impressed.
That's where,
man,
I work.
And
all
I'll
right.
Take a sip on it.
So this is episode 2. Quick rundown of how the show works is that it's broken down into 4 segments. Each week there's going to be the movie pick of the week. There's Indie Spotlight. There is Retro Rewind. And finally, there's going to be a special topic. So we start off with the movie pick of the week, which essentially is where we vote in our Facebook group of which movie we want to see as the movie pick of the week. So we look at about 10 different films this week, which is way too many. Normally, there's about like 4 or 5, but this week we have 10 different movies. So the competition this week is for reals, and that is The Meg, Black Klansman, Dog Days, Skate Kitchen, Summer of 84, Slender Man, The Package, Elizabeth Harvest, Madeline, and the drum roll. A little bit too long, but that's okay. Black Klansman. Yay. Black Klansman. All right. So, I'm very animated on this show.
Yes, you are.
Black Klansman, the latest joint from Spike Lee. I saw it twice. What a phenomenal little film, but I'm going to shut the hell up for a little bit. Lauren, what did you think of this movie?
Oh, make me go first. I'm on the spot. Okay. I was excited for this movie pretty much all year, if not longer. I was really curious to see what the reaction out of Cannes would be. And as soon as I heard the reaction, I was even more excited. And I finally got to see it last week. Or no, God, was that this week? Was it Monday?
Yeah, Monday.
Yeah, it was Monday. And I loved it. I thought it was hilarious. I thought it was emotional. I think I summed it up best with my tweet, actually, which was, make no mistake, the film is hilarious, but it does not pull its punches, and it punches hard and often. And I thought that, you know, it's such an important film for right now, and I thought it was great. I loved the performances. I loved hearing, like, little Denzel. I'm sorry. I know he's a person. I kept hearing Denzel whenever he talked, and yes. I was like, oh, he sounds like his dad, and I just loved it. Anyways, that's my 2 cents. What do you guys think?
I wasn't really sure what to expect of it. I like a lot of Spike Lee's stuff, and I was blown away. I was so utterly moved by so many moments. I want to talk specifically about one moment with Harry Belafonte. It's, oh my God.
Yes.
Oh my God. One of the most, like, amazing scenes I've ever seen. It's incredibly well shot and beautifully done. And Harry Belafonte is just, he's elegant. And just, you can't take your eyes off of it. But there's so many moments in it. And you know, there is a gut punch in the end. Mm-hmm. Which I won't spoil, obviously, but like it needed to be there. I felt it. Yeah, it hit me hard. Yeah. It's a fantastic film.
I cried.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'm going to tell you when I cried, but before I tell you that, let me tell you how I feel about the film. So I think this is Spike Lee's best movie ever. That's what I think. Mm-hmm. I think of all his films that he's done, I think this is the best one he's done. And he's always been a very socially conscious filmmaker. All of his films always come at the right time. They always come with some socially conscious thing. Remember when he did Do the Right Thing? There was all that stuff happening in Bensonhurst, New York at the time. Yeah. So he's always kind of right on time when it comes to that kind of thing. But the two favorite parts of the film that I really enjoyed, this made me laugh out loud, is the part where the Ron Stallworth is at the rally and they go to take that Polaroid picture. I hollered.
Oh, yes.
I hollered. And they go to fight for the picture and he snatches it back for real. So that I did some research on that. That moment actually did happen.
Wow.
Like, that wasn't for dramatic purposes. That moment actually did happen. And surprise, surprise, the Polaroid has never been found.
Wow.
So there's that. And the other moment that I liked is the very, very end of the film where they show the American flag is red, white, and blue. Mm-hmm. And then when it turns to black and white, it's flipped upside down. That speaks volumes without saying a word.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
So those were my two favorite moments. But I think it was great. I didn't know. I'm glad I didn't know that John David Washington was Denzel's son until way after the fact.
I didn't actually know that.
I didn't either. Yeah. I didn't know until she told me last week.
Didn't know.
Seriously?
Mm-hmm. I told him last week, but I found out, I'd seen the movie three times at this point and didn't know that. Wow. So I was like, I didn't know. Didn't care. And so when I found out, when I saw it the next time, which was premiere night, last night or a couple of nights ago, I was like, oh, he does kind of sound like his dad sometimes. Yeah. It's kind of weird. But yeah, I enjoyed that film very much. And I'm looking forward to seeing them getting some awards love, you know, because Spike Lee has a very contentious relationship with the award shows committees and voters and stuff. But I'm hoping that, you know, like, he has evolved and mature over the years and time. I hope that the voters and the people on these committees have too, and see his art for what it is.
Yeah, for sure.
No, I think this film, like you and I talked about on Black Tomatoes, is that this movie is so important and so timely. And when it comes to an end, you get really upset. You know, you're watching the movie, you're kind of entertained. You know, you feel like the good guy wins in the end kind of thing. You know, that's not really a spoiler. You should know how this movie kind of plays out from the trailer.
Absolutely.
But at the same time, like, then it goes into some real-world stuff that has happened over the last couple of years. And then when you think about it, and then that happiness turns into a frown. And you just, I got choked up last night when I watched it again and I seen this. It's just like, why does this keep happening? Why does this keep happening over and over again? Yeah, it really is.
It's horrible. You know, and on a side note, when the first thing I thought about when I saw it is I went to college in Missouri, which is where I'm from, in Columbia. And the very first or second weekend I was there as a college student, they came around with notes and told us not to come outside the dorm this one Saturday because the Klan had planned to march down the street.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
I'm just saying. And I was just like, wow. Really? And I seriously was like, wow, is the Klan really a thing? Is that still a thing? Clearly it was. Yeah. So
for you guys, this is a big movie. I think that a lot of people are going to be talking about this movie. I think it's going to have some real legs at the box office. I don't know what the predictions are for it this week, but I feel like it's just going to keep building word of mouth, word of mouth, word of mouth. Where do you guys see this movie landing Oscar season? What categories do you think it would be in?
I think it's a shame if it does not get a nod for Spike Lee. And Best Picture, honestly, at the very least.
Absolutely.
Best Actor, I think he's absolutely deserving
absolutely.
Of the best performance. It's a fantastic performance.
And I enjoyed the score.
A lot of people are talking about the score.
I thought it was very, 70s and groovy. And, you know,
Terrence Blanchard did the original music, the jazzy stuff. Which, did y'all notice that whenever Spike Lee does films, he always, whenever there's a really dramatic or intense moment, he always infuses some type of jazz music.
Yes. Moments,
yes.
Which I think is brilliant because it kind of it heightens that moment unconsciously, whether you realize it or not, until that other music comes in and you're like, oh, what just happened?
It's powerful. It's powerful to watch, and it's powerful to listen to and feel. You really feel with this film. You really feel these characters, and you really try and connect. I mean, I gotta say, the actress who played Patrice, mm-hmm. and I'm not remembering her name at the moment, mm-hmm. but I thought she was fantastic. Mm-hmm.
Laura Harrer.
Well, I was a fan.
Yeah. Everyone in this cast, Carla has been very eye-opening with this movie to me, mm-hmm. because when I came out of it, you know, I said to her on the show that I felt like the members of the KKK were a little bit too cartoony in spots. And she's like, no, that's just probably the way they are. Because if you remember the one leader, I think his name was Walter, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Walter. That guy was so... He was so serious, and his act, that's the guy from The Blacklist. His acting was so good and so believable. Mm-hmm. Like, you bought into him. He seemed like a sane human being.
The other guy,
Felix, was he so extreme?
His name is Jasper.
Jasper.
He's from Finland.
Oh, okay. He was so extreme, and, you know, like you pointed out, like, there's one of those in every group. And then, of course, there's the guy from Itania, the dumb guy. So I thought he did such a great job of highlighting three different types of KKK members. Yeah. Someone who seemed like they were very intelligent and really believed in what they were selling. And if you listen to that guy, he seemed to make sense. Yeah. And then the other two were like, one was too extreme, one was too stupid. And I think that perfectly embodies America as a whole.
Well, it never felt like it. Yeah. It never felt like it was stereotypes. It never felt cliched to me at all.
Not to me either. I don't know what a Klan person is.
Right.
I don't know either. But what I do know, I've seen them because they march past my door. Yeah. But I've seen, but in any extremist group, in any group that goes to the extreme with their politics or their beliefs, there's always those three types of people in the group. Mm-hmm. Always.
Absolutely.
You know, even with religious groups, there's always the one that's just doing way too much. Then there's the one that's calm and is, you know, in line with what the principles are of whatever the thing is. And then there's always that one that you just want to punch him in his throat and go sit in the corner somewhere.
Yeah, for sure.
For me, what I thought was interesting, and maybe tell me if you guys felt this way too, there were times where I wasn't sure if I should laugh.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought it was funny because Spike Lee, I think it was at the LA premiere, he came out and said, white people, it's okay to laugh.
He did say that.
That made me cackle because I was like, oh, okay, good. Because there were parts where, like, at the screening, I was like, is it wrong to laugh here? You know,
like I said, Spike Lee has a pattern with his films, and humor is one of his patterns. No matter how intense mm-hmm. and awkward the subject is, there's always something funny. Remember in Malcolm X, there was the scene where him and Denzel are walking down the street when Malcolm was young in the zoot suits? Like, that was hilarious. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So he always infuses some kind... I'm a huge Spike Lee fan. have you noticed?
I can tell it all.
No.
But he always infuses some type of humor in all of his films. And I was at the premiere too. I got to talk to him on the red carpet. And, you know, he can be kind of hit or miss sometimes. Sometimes when you mm-hmm. interview him, he can not be so lovely. And then other times he's a delight. And thank goodness for me. This time he was the bomb.com. But, oh my goodness. We talked about HBCUs, and I asked him if he, because he does such serious, socially conscious films, I was like, have you ever anticipated or wanted to do a comedy? And he was like, nah. He's like, the closest I ever came to that was the Kings of Comedy. And I was like, what about a scripted comedy? Don't you want to do a scripted comedy, Spike? And he was like, nah, I'll leave that to my cousin. So this is, right. So do you know who his cousin is? Y'all are going to gag because I gagged. You know who Malcolm D. Lee is?
Yes! Oh,
that's Spike's cousin!
Oh. Wow!
Their fathers are brothers. Oh. That's what Spike told me on the red carpet. I was like, because I was looking like y'all did, and he's like, wow. You didn't know that? It ain't no secret. I'm like, no, brother, I didn't know that.
Wow.
It was kind of, I know, eye-opening moments here.
There you go.
You learn on the show.
That's right. We're a learning experience. The other thing that I will say is that I think it will be a crime if Topher Grace does not get Best Supporting Actor for this, because like we talked about also is that he is so spot on, it's almost scary. I don't think you can get better casting if you tried.
Yeah, it is fantastic.
He looks so much like the real David Duke, didn't he?
It's unnerving how much
isn't
he
looks like him. Isn't it,
well,
though?
Well, even Ron Stallworth.
Oh, yeah.
He was like, it was hard for me to watch because it that's what he looked like and that's what he sounded like.
Yeah, I spoke to all of them, and Ron Stallworth, I was like, dude, why? Because I'm going to be honest. As a person of color in this country, the last thing I would do, if that was my experience, was want to put that in a book for people. Because I would be, I'm not going to lie, I would be afraid of what the repercussions would be, especially in this climate. I'm like, what made you do that? And he was basically like, have you met me? I'm like, I have now. He said, I'm just not that dude, you know? He said, I never backed away from anything in my life. I'm like, well, I'm glad you didn't because you gave us a really wonderful story. But he was hilarious. He's really fun. He's actually very funny, Ron Stallworth is. He's very comical. Yeah, he's got a really wicked sense of humor, which you wouldn't think that. I don't know why, but you just wouldn't think he'd have a wicked sense of humor. But he has a wicked sense of humor, and so does his wife.
Oh, nice. Nice.
So on this show, we started doing a rating system out of 10. What would you guys give this out of 10?
Well, I'll start. I gave it 9. Okay. 9 out of 10.
I wasn't prepared for that question.
Stumped.
How is this like a scale where we can do like 9 point something?
Yes, you can do it. Yes. You can do like a 9.5, 8.5.
I'd say like an 8.5.
Okay. Right. Carla?
You know I'm giving it a 10. This is my boy. So.
Yeah. You know, and me and Carla also very rarely see eye to eye on films, but I'm with her on this one. I'm giving it a 10.
What? Wow. Yeah. Yes.
Wow. And we're close, too.
Yeah.
So let's do it.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. Oh, my God. It was amazing.
So moving on to the next segment is Indie Spotlight, which is where we talk about a film that's currently in theaters. It's on demand. It's streaming somewhere. And we each have a different pick. Jimmy, let's start with you.
Well, we're on the topic. There was a movie that I saw. I had no idea what I was stepping into, and I fell in love with it. Blind Spotting.
Oh,
I loved every minute. I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know what to feel. And I loved how the director just basically said, hey, we're going to do this, and we're not going to go where you think we're going to go. We're going to add verse in here. It was astonishing. I love this film. I could watch it over and over. This is a good year for movies about race.
I was saying that. Yeah. I said that to Scott on Black Tomatoes. I was like, we have 3 of them in less than 60 days.
Right?
You know, Blind Spotting, Sorry to Bother You, and Black Klansman. So it's just like, ooh, it's going to be really interesting to see which one of the three is going to be the cream that rises to the top, don't
you
think?
Absolutely. Yeah, just a wonderful movie. Just a wonderful movie. Great performance, David, Raphael. You guys, I worship you. Amazing stuff.
Yeah.
That's my pick.
How about for you, Lauren?
You know my pick.
Yes.
You showed me the pick. I have you to thank.
You're welcome. She was like, I'm going to do this Netflix movie with Kristen Bell. And I said, okay, did you watch it yet? She's like, no, I didn't watch it yet. I'll watch it. And then she was like, no, I need to do something else.
Yeah, I saw that one. Watch it. It was good. Like,
Like Father? Really? You thought so?
Okay.
It's a Carnival Cruise commercial.
It is.
There were parts of it that, this is what I did like about it. I like the fact that it highlighted a father and daughter relationship as adults, as opposed, because a lot of times in film we see father-daughter relationships highlighted where the little girl, where the female is a little kid and not a grown woman, and not with conflict, and not on a cruise ship. there's that. And it also highlighted how obsessed and addicted we are to devices. You know, how we just cannot, as I sit here with one in front of my face, we just cannot put the phone down, can't put the tablet down, just can't do it. And oftentimes it ruins our relationships, it ruins our lives, and it ruined hers. So that's what I did like about it, but it was a Carnival Cruise commercial.
So your real pick.
So that's not my pick, but yeah, there were parts that I liked about it, just to say. And I love Kristen Bell. So.
Me too.
Can't go wrong with her. But so my real pick is The Year of Spectacular Men.
Mm. Oh, I like that one.
Right?
She's
so lovely. and it's, for those that don't know what it is, it's obviously a little indie, directed by Leah Thompson, and it stars her and her daughters, Madeline and Zoe Deutsch. And I always, like, I'm worried I'm going to mess that one up.
No, you got it. You did good. You did good, kid. You did good.
Thanks, guys. And yeah, and so it mostly follows Madeline's character as she navigates post-grad life and sort of discovering who she wants to be, and there are various men that sort of enter and exit the picture. But I found it more of like a family drama, honestly, like a dramedy to me anyways. Those are the parts that stuck out to me. And to me, when an indie is done right, more so than with, you know, your studio big budget type films, I feel like you can feel the heart behind them more.
Yeah,
you can feel the passion that went into them. And maybe that's just me, but whenever an indie's done right, that tends to stick out to me. And with this one, I definitely felt that. It you could feel the heart behind it. It just, it has so much heart. And it's funny, too. I mean, I thought the script was really funny.
Yeah. So. I think in the second half of the movie, when they focus more on the family dynamic, I think the movie goes from like a 6 to like an 8.
Absolutely.
Because that is where the heart and soul of this movie is. Mm-hmm. And the relationship between the mother and the two daughters, I think, is just terrific. Obviously, mm-hmm. We know why. But yeah. I just think that it's just so natural. It's just so natural. And the story feels so relatable and so honest mm-hmm. and so true to life.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So. How about you, Carla?
Okay, so mine is not in a theater right now.
Mine wasn't either.
No, okay. it's on demand.
Okay, so I'll just say it. But I really like this independent film that was done a few years back called Pariah by Dee Reese. Have y'all seen that?
Yeah, I have. Yeah. I have.
I love this movie mainly because it's Dee Reese. And I like the fact that Kim Wayans is in it, and she had been doing a lot of comedy. You know, she's part of the Wayans family, which is known. They're like the comedy version of the Jacksons, you know.
That's so true.
They're like the comedy version of the Jacksons, Jacksons or the Osmonds. And she's in this movie playing this overly religious mom that has this daughter that's a lesbian who can't quite figure out whether she is a lesbian or if it's bad or if it's good or how she wants to navigate her life through that. So I really like that. And the lead character was played by Adepero Oduye. Mm. I loved her. She was so good. It was such a good film. It was tone-wise, it was very similar to what Moonlight was. It's, mm-hmm. it's in that same kind of lane. But I like it. I liked it very, very much. And I always like stories that shed light on an aspect of life that people don't want to talk about out loud. And at the time this movie came out, you know, the LGBTQ rights things wasn't as loud and pronounced as it is now. It was just bubbling under the surface when this film came out. So I love the fact that this kind of like moved toward that edge and brought a spotlight to that world, because people think that because you're different, something's wrong with you. You're mentally ill or you're crazy or, you know, you weren't raised right or you were molested or something. They always think that some kind of really demonic thing happened to you to make you the person that you are. And what people fail to realize is that, you know, some people are just born that way. They just are. I had a cousin and an uncle that were gay. Mm-hmm. And from the moment I met them in my life, they were always that way to me. That they didn't become that person. It wasn't a lifestyle for them. Yeah. That was innately who they were. So to see a film like this speak to a young person that's like that, because when my cousin, my uncle were young, they didn't have a Pariah to go see. They didn't have a Moonlight to go see. They didn't have any of these films that are out on that subject to go see to let them know that they're not alone and that they're not crazy. So
yeah, I mean, it. You talk about representing something that's very underrepresented. This movie was, I feel, way before its time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Moonlight got so much love and everything. And this movie, I remember I saw it in Philly when I lived there. And it's just like, it came one week and it was gone the next.
It got no love.
No one.
And that happens with indie films a lot, don't y'all think?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. For sure.
Yeah. And the sad part about this is that there's almost like this whole subgenre of gay movies that are geared towards white people. I hate to say it, but there were so many of them when the days of Blockbuster and the video stores, you would go in there and there was always like multiple ones each week. Yeah. And there was never. So to see this, a young black girl, you know, coming out as lesbian on screen, it was very rare. It was very refreshing. And they're so few and far between.
It was beautiful.
And
really
I thought
was.
This movie was beautiful. And, you know, I'm glad you brought it up because now people can have a chance to see it. It is streaming on Netflix.
It is
streaming on Netflix.
It is streaming on Netflix.
So, yeah. I do. Do you guys have any closing words on this one?
I agree with everything you said. It's a power. It's a,
and you should.
Yeah.
As you should.
He's like,
except on horror. We can't agree on that one.
Oh, no. No, we definitely not going to agree on that.
And I'm going to be the weirdo this week and actually just give some love to the doggy movie, because I know that a lot of people will not be going to see this little dog movie, which I thought was just delightful.
It's so cute.
It's not going to change the world. It's not going to redefine the romantic comedy. It's not going to redefine dog movies as we know them. But it's just so darn adorable, and I thought the chemistry between the characters, all the human characters, was so spot on. Just really enjoyed it. You saw it, right?
Yeah, I saw Dog Days, and I'm like a new fan of Tone Bell. I'm like, where did he come from?
Oh, my God, really? Yeah. Charming as hell.
He was fine. I was like, what is going on? He's fine, and he can act? I'm like, where is he? What's his number? Where is he at? Yes. Spoiler alert, they are on a TV show. I think it's on CBS. Where they're playing Love Interest again. I'm feeling like they're going to hook up in real life.
Probably.
I'm feeling like that's about to happen. It's going to happen. I'm putting that out there. I might have to trip her over a rope or something.
That movie, you know, what a lot of people are not talking about with this movie, because I feel like it's being very overlooked, is, did you notice this, how naturally diverse that movie was?
I didn't know. You know, it's funny because the world I live in is diverse.
Right.
Like, when I walk out of this door and even at this table, I just see people.
Right.
So when
I agree.
What I'm saying?
Yeah.
So when I would look at a film, I didn't, now that you bring it up, it was, but I didn't really notice it.
It's just something that I feel like, you know, we've lived in this society right now where we're always talking about diversity and or the lack thereof. And here's a film that, like you just said, you just watch it and it's naturally diverse. And it's there's the great storyline between the family adopting the little girl.
Yeah.
And you know, the guy from This Is Us, who
Cephas Jones.
Oh my God,
yeah.
He's amazing.
Yeah, he's
that guy is amazing.
He's amazing in everything he does.
Yeah. His line delivery is just so spot on, and it's
because, like, it's real.
Yeah.
He it seems to me that he acts from a place of immense reality, and some people do not. Some people is put on, is they I don't even know what the vernacular is to describe what they do, but it's just too many things. I just say that it's just too much. But he was really good, and Eva Longoria was really good too.
She was,
because, you know, we're so used to seeing Eva Longoria. People, whenever someone is on a long-running TV series, we always have a tendency to associate them with whatever that role is, and that's natural.
That's
because
natural,
especially
yeah.
if we love them in that role and they've been awarded for it or nominated for it or whatever, we just automatically look at the Fonz, look at Henry Winkler, at, you know, Megan Mullally from Will and Grace.
Yes.
Like, we just naturally do that. But Eva Longoria in this film, this was one of many times, because she's been doing a lot of dramas and things outside of that lane lately, in addition to producing. This was one time that I looked at her and I didn't see Abby from Desperate Housewives. I just didn't. And I was really happy about that. I love her. She's so sweet. And she's a really good actress. Let me ask y'all a question. So, speaking of Eva Longoria, when you see people or actresses like that, do you guys have a tendency, because they are as pretty as they are, to overlook the fact that they actually have some acting chops? Or are we so busy looking at what they look like?
No.
Well, here's the thing. I always remember when Jessica Lange first came out, and she was gorgeous.
Tootsie.
She was King Kong, even. When she was doing this silly film about Giant Ape, and people are like, yeah, she's just saying, let's just get her topless or something, and that's it. And then freaking Frances.
What?
Oh my God.
What?
Wow.
Her and Sam Shepard, they wore that out.
That movie and that performance, and suddenly she was the thing. And now she's a legendary actor. She's one of the best working today, period.
And she's coming back to American Horror.
Yes, thank you. Yes, finally.
Which I won't be seeing, because it has more horror in it.
We'll watch it together. We're going to watch it together.
She's so good.
I love her, but I will not be watching American Horror.
Oh, she's so good at it.
Oh, she is. I'm so excited.
We digress.
I do feel like nowadays, though, there is, on both the male and female side of things, where I feel like there's a lot of actors that they put into movies and they try to make them happen, that they just don't have it. And it's because they're handsome or they're beautiful. And I've noticed that a lot more now than I ever did before. Like, I just feel like there's so many people who are like, why are we pushing you when there's so many great actors or great actresses or people who are not yet discovered who can be taking these roles?
I agree.
It's cyclical, though. It happens. I was watching some old, like, I think it might have been a blaxploitation film or something that came on really late one night at home. And I noticed that the actors in this film, we don't even see them anymore. And I was like, what happened to them? But at the time, they were the go-to people. They were in every movie, on every TV show. They were everywhere. And it's cyclical. Everybody has their, like, 10 years or 5 years, and then they switch it over to someone else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a shame.
But Dog Days, back to Dog Days. Yeah, right. Dog Days is a really funny movie, and it's really good, and it is very diverse. And if you're an animal lover, you're going to love it, you know, and because it speaks to all of those different phases of dealing with an animal. So it's like...
Little Gertrude, though, that Gertrude dog was so adorable. The little chihuahua with the little helmet. So... you can tell we're dog people over here. Sorry.
Well, I'm a cat dog, but that's okay.
They're going to make cat days. It's going to be the same. Well, don't worry.
Cat days, dog days, whatever.
Moving on to our next segment, which is Retro Rewind, which is where we talk about something that's a little bit older that you can find available on streaming or DVD, Blu-ray, on demand. Carly, you get to go first for this.
Yay! So one of my favorite movies of all time is The Five Heartbeats, directed by and starring Robert Townsend.
Yeah,
I love it because it's that throwback to like the old Motown days and the guy groups and all of that kind of stuff. But it also highlights all the drama that comes along with that we may or may not have known. And the group that had was a consult on this film was the Four Tops, which was a Motown group. So they were the consult on that film with Robert Townsend so that they could, you know, get that type of thing accurate. And unfortunately, the guy that played Eddie King Jr., I forget his name, but his character kind of was true to life. He really was someone that ended up being involved in drugs much to his demise, which was really sad to see.
Yeah.
But it's a really lighthearted film. Robert Townsend is singing. He has this one little moment where he's singing with his little sister. He has a little toy horse and he's dancing around. It's so much fun. And when I get really down in the dumps and I just need something to pick me up and make me smile or, you know, just put me in a good mood, I will throw that Five Heartbeats DVD in and watch it in a heartbeat, no pun intended. And it's coming out. Robert Townsend did a documentary. It's going to be released through Fathom Events on August 27th. People can see the film and see the documentary behind the scenes of how he directed the film, how he came to that subject. It's just a lot of fun, and I just love it.
Awesome.
Has anyone seen it? I will admit I did not.
Y'all have got to see The Five Heartbeats. It's been a minute.
Yeah, it's been a minute.
But it's good.
Yeah.
It's good.
It is a good movie.
Trust me, it's good. It's a good one.
Going back to you, Lauren.
Well, mine is also something that makes me happy and is one of those that I'll put in whenever I'm feeling sad, and that's When Harry Met Sally.
Oh, I love that.
I think it's one of, if not the best romantic comedies of all time.
I agree.
It's an absolute classic.
I agree, yeah, for sure.
Right? I've never met someone who does not like that. Are you going to like...
No, I love it. No.
Because I was like, am I going to get ready to punch him in the hair?
No.
I know.
No. Billy Crystal and Meg Ryan, you can't ask for better chemistry than those two.
No, you cannot.
That's
fantastic. And like, I had never looked at Billy Crystal in that way until
until that movie, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, well, maybe he is kind of cute.
Right? I was like, this is kind of weird. But they're both so great. And I think what works with that film is that, you know, so often with romantic comedies, which I love, guilty pleasure, 100%. But so often they're cheesy or just like the characters are just so generic, you know, and you could take them out of this film and put them in this other film and they'd still be the same films, you know.
Absolutely.
What I mean?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And when Harry Met Sally, I feel like their neuroses are just so perfect. And like, you know a Harry, you know a Sally.
Yeah, you
know?
Do. That person that always gets the stuff on the side, I can't.
Right? I think I actually am a little bit Sally. Like, every time we go to a restaurant, and I do that, my husband's like, on the side is a big thing with you.
Oh, no.
So, yeah.
She's like, yeah, it is.
Yeah, it is.
But how about that iconic scene?
Yes.
The one at the table in the diner.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right, which one?
Yeah.
There's the wagon,
which
one do we consider there's the wagon so wheel many. Scene. There's the Christmas tree scene. But the scene in the diner where she fakes the orgasm and Rob Reiner's mother's all like, I'll have what she's having. I love the fact that I found out after the fact that that was his mother that says that.
Yeah. And the fact that it was not, I don't think it was written
that way. It
wasn't
scripted.
Yeah.
She just said that.
It was improvised.
And it became like this iconic thing.
Yeah. Everyone remembers that
part. Yeah, I love that film.
It's so great. I love everything about it. I think I can quote it from like front to back.
Of course you can.
And I think that for people who haven't seen it, honestly, Star Wars fans, one of the best performances from Carrie Fisher. It's she was so
she was
lovely.
So funny.
Oh my gosh,
she was really
funny. I feel
like
so many people just know her from Star Wars.
Yeah.
And if that's you, change that.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, see When Harry Met Sally.
That ASAP,
oh my gosh. Yeah.
She's a comedic genius. She really,
or better yet, they should go see look up Postcards from the Edge because she wrote that.
Oh my gosh, yes.
That, when it stars Meryl Streep and Shirley MacLaine, that is hysterical.
Yeah.
Ooh, it got quiet.
Yeah, no. Stop. Got quiet for a second there. I'll go next so I could just mix
go
it up
it.
A little bit. My pick is Wet Hot American Summer because we're like at the end of the summer right now, and you know, that was like about the end of camp. And this was a throwback. My God, this movie was a flop. It was a huge flop. It came out at Sundance. You know, it got decent reviews out of there. Went on, did nothing at the box office. Became a cult classic. They did two Netflix spinoff shows because of this movie. Mm-hmm. They brought back the entire cast, which is amazing. Which everyone kind of looks the same, except for Michael Showalter. He's like the only one who kind of looks a little bit different. And you're like, wow, age was good to you guys. Just really, it's a bizarre movie. Christopher Maloney talks to a can of peas in the movie. There's a whole thing about a science fair and a rocket coming down from space. David Hyde Pierce is in it.
Yeah.
Janine Garofalo is in it.
Bradley Cooper, Michael Ian Black.
All
oh my god.
In that movie.
Yeah, yes. It's like if you look at
Amy Poehler.
So many people are in it. I don't know if you would like it, Carla, but you should try it out. It's Netflix.
Hilarious, yeah.
It's really fun.
It?
Did you like it?
No,
that's what Ashley's reaction was when she watched it. She's like, yeah.
It's like that America. It's like that Porky's kind of thing, isn't it?
No, it's more like because they're all playing teenagers when they clearly look like Bradley Cooper. You know, you're like, and he's like, well, I'm 14.
Yeah.
And you're like, no, you're not. It's hilarious. Yeah. Trust me, it's that part's hilarious as it is.
Yeah, it might be best enjoyed with some substances. I will say
probably,
that.
Probably.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think it's such a delightful, fun movie.
Oh, so
and
fun.
That they use that song Higher and Higher in this, and it's like one of my favorite songs because of this movie. It's just so funny. And it's so cheesy the way that it's introduced in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Christopher Maloney's like running, and there's someone else. Was it Michael Showalter's character is running too? It's just so corny and so cheesy. It's like a play on like 80s movies on how like corny and cheesy those ones were. And I did like both of the Netflix spinoff things as well.
Yeah, there we go. Oh,
really?
Of course you did.
Yeah. The first one was better than the second one.
I agree with that, yeah.
If Lauren is over there making faces, I don't know. I kind of trust my girl's opinion.
We can stick together on this
girl,
one.
Here. We're right here.
All right, Jimmy.
Well, it's back to school. And, you know, with all the love that we've been seeing from teen movies, especially the phenomenal Eighth Grade, I want to look at Edge of 17 with Hailee Steinfeld and Woody Harrelson and... Gosh, an amazing cast and a beautiful film. It's funny. It's heartbreaking. And it's weird because I had a teacher exactly like Woody Harrelson. Mr. Brooks, hey, how are you? He's still around. I contacted him after the movie. I was so moved by the movie. And it felt real. It felt smart. And I love the fact that they made Hailee a really normal kid. She wasn't always likable. And it worked, and I liked her brother sometimes, and sometimes he was a jerk, and it's a wonderful
brothers
movie.
Brothers and sisters,
yeah,
me.
Yes, exactly. I
have
love
a brother. I can speak to
yeah.
that.
Yeah,
I do too.
So yeah, if you missed Edge of 17, please, please, please go see it. It's on I think it's on HBO.
It's
or
on
like.
Showtime Anywhere.
Showtime, okay.
Showtime Anywhere. It's on demand. It's also on Blu-ray. and DVD and Wonderful. iTunes. I did a little homework for this show.
You think?
Yeah, a little bit.
He's good. We like him.
Do you guys have any closing remarks on The Edge of 17?
Just what we were talking about earlier, which is I feel like it was so underappreciated and it just got buried whenever it came out, but it is so good.
Should have been a hit. Should have been a hit.
Yeah.
They buried it like it was like right at the beginning of award season.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It premiered at TIFF. It was the closing night film, and I feel like that was the year where there were so many great movies. Like, that was the La La Land year. That was Nocturnal Animals. That was Moonlight. There was
I still think it should have gotten a nomination. I honestly think it should have gotten a nomination.
Yeah, of course.
It was that good.
Of course.
Haley was...
Yeah, she's
It
great.
Might have been their marketing campaign. If they didn't have a good marketing campaign, if the studio, it was an indie film, yes?
Yeah.
So, STX.
STX.
Yeah, I think they just didn't know how to...
Yeah, a lot of times, because honestly, Black Klansman isn't getting that much marketing either. Not really.
No.
I mean, it's Black Klansman and Blindspotting and Sorry to Bother You are all word of mouth movies.
Yes.
There's not a whole bunch of, you know, big machine marketing going behind those films. And we'll wait and see what happens, but that's probably what happened to Edge of 17.
Yeah, for sure was. It certainly was.
Because we have to remember that most of the people, we live in L.A., so we get movies and people that live in New York, they get it in Chicago and D.C., but people that live in Missouri or Georgia or North Carolina or South Carolina, they may not get the films opening the same weekends that it opens every place else, and the marketing campaign may not be there for them to see it. They just don't know.
Yeah, that's very true, especially a small film like that.
Because, you know, let me ask y'all a question. Mm-hmm. So doesn't it bother you that nowadays when the nominations come out, oftentimes there'll be like two or three films that haven't even hit the theaters yet?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That bothers me. Does that bother y'all?
Yes, it does.
It's
what
weird.
Happened to audiences seeing the movies?
You remember when it was The Rider like last year? The Rider was at the Film Independent Spirit Awards.
Yeah.
It wasn't even out yet. Like, the only people who saw it were film festival goers.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Let's be honest, not that many people go to those things.
Right. That's annoying. I don't like that.
I think it's a turnoff to the general public, you know? Like, I think, like you said, I mean, we're sort of in our own bubble, and I think we forget that a lot. You know, we're lucky because we get to see things all the time, and all the little indie films do play in L.A.
Yeah.
But, you know, people in, like, the middle of Missouri or something, you know, are they going to know what that is? No.
No. I'm from Missouri, and I know they don't. So there's that.
Yeah, it's a shame that, I mean, studios do a really bad job of focus, and not even studios, I should say PR companies in general, do a very bad job of making sure movies are discovered outside of major cities. I feel like they in major cities, there's always press days, there's always posters. You see it, even like the smallest films. I mean, Black Klansman, there's a billboard hanging up right outside this building.
I saw it driving here,
yeah.
But, you know, that person who wants to see it probably in Kentucky,
you're not going to see
a billboard. You're not going to know what this movie is.
No.
And we're so spoiled here because we do get to see everything. We get so much exposure to everything that we often forget, you know, why certain movies are even made. You know, like when we look at a lot of big movies that come out and we're kind of like, why are they making this again? It's because those are the movies people remember. And those are the people that, you know, those are the movies that studios put the money behind, the PR companies put the money behind. They don't put money behind these movies. And that's a damn shame.
It's a shame, yeah. Well, you've got that name. You've got that oh, people know this. People have seen this movie. They'll go see it again.
Yeah.
And that's why the reboots. That's why the remakes. That's why the sequels.
That's what I always laugh about is people always complain about it. Like, oh, why is there another sequel? That's all Hollywood does. And it's like, well, you keep going to see it.
Don't stop going to see it.
Right. Yeah. I was saying, oops. I was saying to Scott that there are certain movie stars, too, that it doesn't matter what film they make. If they say Denzel Washington is Denzel Washington stars, people will go, they don't care what the movie is. And the same with Tom Cruise, the same with The Rock.
Well, sometimes, though, and I think that's dying out. Because
it is.
Tom Cruise can't sell a movie unless it's Mission Impossible.
I was going to say.
Most of them don't do well.
You know, that's a good point.
Reacher. Dwayne Johnson is feeling that this year.
Yes, he is.
He's feeling that with Rampage not doing as well.
He has
Skyscraper.
Another movie coming out in 2 weeks.
Yeah, it might be overkill.
He has another movie coming out in 2 weeks. I can't even remember the name of it.
Oh,
but
my
I saw
gosh.
That and I was like, oh, really? He's got another movie coming out? He's on Ballers on, is it HBO? Yeah. I think it's HBO.
He might be too much too soon.
He's making that money. I ain't mad at him. Make it while you're young and you can still move and do those tricks, but y'all. Yeah, that's a lot. Yeah.
So moving on to our next topic and our final topic of today is the Academy announced this wonderful news yesterday that there is going to be a popular film category. And I feel like the internet really set this on fire. I mean, I don't think I heard anyone say anything positive about it, but let's talk a little bit about it. Jimmy, let's start with you.
When I saw that, my reaction was, well, I don't, so it was like, you know, is Paul Blart going to get nominated? I mean, I think it's silly.
Certainly not.
I mean, hey, I made money, so what are you talking about? What's popular? What, everything that makes money, everything that, I think just open the best pictures up to other movies. Just do that. Simple as that. Let other films, that whether they're maybe horror films, whether they're comedies, let them, give them a little more love when it comes to Oscars. Make it a little more diverse, another word again, in what we nominate. Instead of just, well, we have to have this because it's, you know, it's a nice biography picture, or this because it's this. Open it up. And I just a pot, top 10 popular movies, really? Do we need that? No, I don't.
And it's not even broken down how they're going to pick it.
Yeah.
The biggest concern right now, of course, that everyone's talking about is that it's because it's on ABC and it's Disney, and you know, this kind of throws, in a lot of ways, it throws shade to like good quality films like Black Panther and Infinity War by like, oh, they're going head to head, and it's not fair because besides maybe Mission Impossible, maybe The Quiet Place, what other movies are going to go there that are not Disney films?
Yeah, that's true.
If they, because that's obviously why they created this, to be more of a blockbuster type category, more of a big budget, you know, popular fare.
Yeah.
Movie.
And again,
go ahead.
No,
go.
Okay, I was just gonna say, and again, it goes back to how are they gonna define it?
Yeah.
That's the big thing. I think a big mistake that they made was not defining it before announcing it and just throwing it out there, and now people are all up in arms, and it's just like, I don't think they thought it through.
Paul Blart 3. It's going to win.
I can't stand you. Oh, my God. You are pure comedy.
No. Surely it's got to be, like, Paul a Black Panther
he's
or an
Paul
Infinity
Blart
War
3.
Movie.
Oh, my God,
but,
I can't.
I mean, it's so unfair, though. I mean, like...
Dear God, no.
We're live.
Yeah, we're live. Carla is having a laughing fit here at the...
Okay, so let me just say what I think about it. There's a couple of things I think about it. I agree with you, Lauren, that it wasn't thought out before they announced it. They needed to announce how the popular vote or the popular film was going to be selected. If or whatever it is. What they should have done... was announced that it would be selected by the American people, the movie going public. And then I think people wouldn't be so like this. But when you know the people voting on these films are Academy members, you know, and that some of them are like 98 years old, like what?
Yeah.
So there's a pro and a con to it. Yeah, it's cool to have that category, but if it's not people, like real movie going people voting on it and not just people that are stars and directors and producers and writers, then who cares?
Yeah.
Well, and one thing I think is interesting, I actually disagree with you. I think everyone that I've seen that's in the industry, whether that's filmmakers or like journalists like us that cover it, they're all up in arms. But the people I know outside the industry that don't have a horse in the race at all actually find it interesting.
Interesting.
Not outright like it. I don't know if that's been the case for you guys, but I've been talking to like my family about it, my husband, you know, other people, and they all seem to think it's kind of a cool idea. Just that, like, oh, the Academy kind of needs to do something.
They're trying to get the numbers up because the viewership was down.
And that's all it is.
They just want to get the numbers up because all of the award shows, regardless of what the Oscars or what it is, all of the numbers have gone down. Mm-hmm. People aren't watching it because they know. You can watch the Oscars, and by the time the Oscars roll around, you know who's going to win what.
Right, yes.
And there used to be a time where you would watch the Oscars, and you'd have no idea who was going to win, who was going to get nominated. You just didn't know. And over the last 10 to 20 years, it's become very predictable.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So I think the general public is kind of over that. Mm-hmm. I'm over that, and I'm not the general public. So I'm over that. I'm over, by the time we get to the Oscars, it's like, well, they won this, so they're a shoe-in. The only time it didn't happen was when everybody thought Sylvester Stallone was going to win, and he didn't.
Oh, yeah. It's Creed. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree. I think they need to do something. I'm not sure that this was that.
The most.
I think it always comes down to this. I mean, right now, a lot of the movies that are nominated, and, you know, whether we want to agree with this or not, are movies that we normally think are some of the best movies of the year. But they're not necessarily what the general public thinks is the best movies of the year. Half the general public, and I could speak for my family back in Pennsylvania, probably have not seen half of these movies. Like when I say, did you see Black Klansman? They're like, no, what is that?
It goes back to what we were talking about earlier.
Did you see Won't You Be My Neighbor? No, what is that? Like, it's just, you just can rattle off these names and people are like, I have no idea. So this is their way of putting in something that is going to asses in seats. You know, best way to look at it. Like, get more people to watch. What I think they need to do is that they need to tighten up that runtime. They need to make it a little bit more fun. They need to make it a little bit more interactive, a little bit more laid back. I think it's too much about the fashion and too much about the cinephiles, and it needs to be more about, like, the movie going public.
2 hours.
That's
all you need. That's 2 hours.
It used to be 2 hours.
Yeah, I know.
It became 3 hours. No,
last year, this year's is still going on right now. It's weird.
I can't stand you, Jimmy. I cannot stand you. Oh, my God. During the lunch hour, morning hour, evening, whatever time it is you're watching and listening. But I agree. It should be like 2 hours from start to finish. But the problem is you get people up there that want to thank everybody that they ever met in their entire life. You get people up there that when they say their time is up, they're like, no, I'll never get up here again, so I'm going to take my time. You get people up there that want to make political statements and all that. And while I respect and admire all of that, there's a time and a place for everything. Sure. Just get your little award, say thank you, and keep it moving. You know?
And it's very uneven, right? So it's like, they do it backwards, right? The awards that people don't really care as much about, like, again, the general public want to know about the big stuff. They want to know what Best Picture is. They want to know about Best Actor.
They want to see their favorite movie.
Right,
stars.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So you're awarding sound mixing and editing and all this stuff where the guy who comes up is like, of course, he's very grateful and appreciative and he deserves it. But at the end of the day, when he's going on for about 5-10 minutes and then the guy who won Best Actor gets to go on for 2 minutes, it's kind of like very uneven. You're kind of like, how are we going to rush that person off?
Yeah. I read somewhere that they were going to get rid of some of the categories
on
camera,
too. Which is smart.
So I think probably stuff like sound mixing and editing and all of that, which kind of is like a slap in the face.
It is.
Let's be real.
It is.
If it weren't for the sound mixers, if it weren't for the editors, if it weren't for the cinematographers, there would be no movie.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
It's really kind of a slap in the face.
That's
a little bit hard to, because you don't want to take it away from them. But just, I don't know, I just don't do the Oscars live anymore. Just cut it down.
Well, you know, back in the day, it literally was 30 to 40 minutes long.
Yeah.
Like, the very first one was, like, 30 minutes long.
They also had way less categories.
Yeah, it did. Well,
it did.
Sure.
But I think my suggestion would be if they already have a night where they honor science and technical. If they just took all of the technical awards and did them that night and then showed and did, you know, like a little montage clip package like they do sometimes. Sometimes they do that during the Oscars and sometimes they don't. It kind of depends.
Yeah.
But if they did that, then that would cut down on the time as well.
I agree.
So just curious for everyone, if you guys could add a category to the award show, which one would you want to add? Go for it.
Scott and I talk about this a lot, that being my husband. just to clarify for the viewers. we talk about this a lot, and we feel like, especially with like La La Land a few years back and movies like that, like a choreography/stunt category, like either separate ones for those or making it one, but something like that to recognize like either really great choreography when you have musicals or, you know, with some of these action films, like, and again, that would be another way to sort of get more popular movies in there, if you will. But to recognize, like, the incredible stunt work that goes into some of these movies. I mean,
the stunt work in all of them.
All of them.
I mean, I think that's such an underlooked, but, you know,
It has been. They've been trying to do that for years.
Yes. Yeah.
That would be my vote, hands down. I think that would be really cool.
How about you?
Well, I mean, Andy Serkis. He should get an Oscar.
Yes.
He should have gotten an Oscar. Yes. They need...
He'll probably get one of those honorary ones.
Yeah, but here we are in a world where a lot of mocap is going to happen. A lot more is going to happen. Thanos, Josh was fantastic. We need some kind of award for that. I don't know how they could do it. I don't know if the team would get it, but I honestly think they should have maybe a character award or something like that. That way the actor gets it and the team behind them gets it.
They could do a mocap. The conversation about mocap and stunts has been happening for at least 10 years.
A long time.
And so has the conversation about casting.
Yeah.
Because, honestly, remember back a few years ago with Moonlight, the casting director had to cast that same character at 3 different ages. Mm-hmm. Do you know how difficult that is and how many people she had to see in order to make that happen?
And what an amazing job.
She did an amazing job. So I think that all casting, mocap, stunts, choreography, all of those categories should be added in some form or another. But the conversation has been going on for eons. They even did a documentary about the whole casting situation. So I don't know.
Now we just have 10 popular movies.
True story. Hashtag true story.
And scene.
And on that note, that is it for this episode of LAOFCS Weekly. We want to just go around the table real quick, tell everyone where you can find you guys.
You can find me across all social media platforms at The Curvy Critic. And watch Scott and I on Sundays on Black Hollywood Live with Black Tomatoes.
You can find me, joblow.com, arrowinthehead.com, all the social circles, Twitter, whatever, what have you. Usually I'm at Jimmy to the O. And September 4th, I have a film coming out, Sick for Toys, that I'm one of the producers, and it's a story that I created, and it's a wonderful script by Justin Xavier. It's twisted.
Of course it is.
Not Paul Blart twisted, but you know.
And you can find me at The Hollywood Reporter, our website, all of our social, and also my personal is _LaurenHuff on Twitter.
There you go. You can find me at The Other Scott M on Instagram and Twitter. You can go to weliveentertainment.com. Make sure you check out Black Tomatoes on Friday at Black Hollywood Live. I'm sorry, Sunday.
5 o'clock.
Thank you.
Scott
Sorry.
You got me confused with your other show.
No. I always give our show a shout out on that show, by the way. Anyway, thanks for watching. Like, comment, subscribe. Let us know what you think. Thank you very much. We'll see you next week. Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.